The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. We will be keeping in touch with Met Aaron to see if anything happens with Lorenzo. We've been talking to people along the West Coast. We've been talking to people in Dingle and Achill, and nothing has happened so far. We spoke to them quite recently. So we'll be keeping in touch with people throughout the programme, but it seems that it's going to be later on in the evening when it hits the West Coast. And I suppose the government are in a sort of a tough position because they have to warn people. And then if it's anticlimactic, which probably you would hope that it is anticlimactic, that it isn't as bad as people expect it to be, well, then they go, what was all the hoo-ha about? And of course, then if it is as bad as they expected, well, then they did a good job. So that's where we're at the moment. And people are very excited and people are cracking jokes. And somebody upstairs in the office said, has Lorenzo arrived yet? And the other person said, yes, he's out in reception. I suppose the fact it's called Lorenzo is putting a sort of a light spin on the whole thing. There'll definitely be a T-shirt. Whatever happens, there'll be a T-shirt at the end of this that says, stay back, stay high, stay dry. It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? That's the advice they're giving to people along the coast. Stay back, stay high and stay dry. And there's a Jack Russell on the back of the Examiner today who's obviously heard what they're saying and taken their advice. It's a great picture. It's a Jack Russell in a cape on top of a donkey. Now, it could be a mule or an ass or a jinnet, but it's some class of an animal. And there is the Jack Russell sitting up there all proud, looking like a mini superhero. And it's a picture that was taken for the Irish Examiner's Readers Photographic Competition. They're offering up €1,500 in prizes to the winner. And it's still open. And IrishExaminer.ie, they're saying there. But that's Jack Russell's doing, staying high and staying dry. And the ass, well, he doesn't know much about it. He just could be a female ass. Do you get female ass? Somebody would put me right on this. It's like currants and raisins. There's ass and mules and jinnets, and I can never remember which is which. One of them is a cross between a donkey and a horse, and then there's a female version. And there's, anyway, somebody will put me straight on that. Stay back, stay high, stay dry. This is the longest running thing I think in the Irish Times I've ever seen. The old sayings, it's still going. We mentioned it last week and we got a good day out of it and it's still going. Irene Allen is on to the Irish Times today. She says, my late mother-in-law from Wexford gave excellent shopping advice. These are the old sayings that people have from their parents and grandparents. And this is what Irene says, the advice she got, you'll get that for half nothing. My Wexford sister-in-law gives encouraging advice in difficult circumstances. Her advice is, take pucks of no notice. And then Irene puts the two together and she says, listen to this now, this is good. It's only in mathematics that nothing remains nothing when divided or multiplied. Real life has more possibilities. You see, half nothing, of course, is nothing. Take pucks of no notice. They're great, aren't they? We've a way with words. Is it no wonder we produced George Bernard Shaw and James Joyce and W.B. Yeats and the rest of them? You get that for half nothing. Yeah. And then Tim Donnelly from Ross Trevor and County Down, he was on as well. I'm watching a particular physical encounter on a rugby pitch or a hurling field. My late father would have opined, no place for a clergyman's son. And another of his favourites was, when referring to somebody very shrewd, he wouldn't sell his hen on a rainy day. Now, what's the reference there? He wouldn't sell his hen on a rainy day. Yours, etc. Would that be something to do with the fact that the hen would get wet and then he'd look smaller than he would if he was dry? Is that it, Tim? You might put us straight on that. And so one that I just remembered when I was reading those this morning, and it's sort of topical, I suppose, with the weather that we're expecting. I remember a man saying to me when he came in out of the weather one evening, he says, I said, how are you doing? What's it like out there? And he says, there's a lazy wind out there, Ray. It'd rather go through you than around you. That's a nice one, isn't it? A bird in the hand's worth two in the bush. Yes, keep coming in. You see, RuPaul's Drag Race is coming to BBC and the judges are going to be Alan Carr and Graham Norton and somebody else. Do you know what this is? It's a drag competition. It's been going for 10 years in America and has a cult following. Michelle Visage, that's the other one, sorry, Michelle Visage, Alan Carr and Graham Norton are going to be the judges, and she's a judge on the American version. And RuPaul is a famous drag artist in America. I watched it once because we were interviewing Michelle Visage on the show, so I needed to watch it. So 10 drag queens battle it out to be crowned the best drag queen. And then they face different tasks set by RuPaul each week. And then RuPaul and the judges decide if they're staying or if they're going. And RuPaul has his own sayings. They don't match up with the ones that we're getting in the Irish Times. But like, if the contestant isn't good, this is what they'll say.
Your actions have consequences. And I'm afraid you leave me no choice. Willem, I have to ask you to leave the competition immediately. Now, sachet away.
That's it. That's the bad news.
Sachet away.
You're off. You're gone. Now, if you've completed the task to the judges and RuPaul's satisfaction, it's a different story.
I've made my decision. Darien Lake, Shantae, you stay.
Yeah, so even if your name is Michael or Paul or Jonathan, it's always...
Shantae, you stay.
Shantae, you stay. It'd be interesting to see if it gets the same cult following on the BBC as it has in America. And there's a drag queen from Belfast competing, Belfast Blue Hydrangea. He's 23, describes her look as high fashion from outer space with Muppet realness. And she watched Drag Race as a child and says Rue introduced her to drag. So there you go. We were talking upstairs about embarrassing things, and somebody was saying that they never know what to do when they see a stranger with something wrong with them. Do you know what I mean? If you spot somebody with a piece of cheese on their chin or their fly open or something like that and they're a stranger, do you tell them? So one of the team were out at a house viewing. And the estate agent was lovely and all that, but she had something very large stuck in her teeth. Now, the member of the team didn't know this person from Adam, and he was wondering, do you tell them? Do you say, excuse me, but you've something stuck in your teeth, or do you let them off? And what if it's not stuck in their teeth, that it's something that's permanent? Then that's embarrassing and it's awkward. I always, if somebody has something on their face, I'll always tell them. No, I don't go beyond that, because... You know, if somebody's fly is open, well, you probably shouldn't have been looking down there, and why were you looking down, how'd you notice and all that sort of thing. So if somebody had, a snot, for example, hanging out of their nostril, I would always tell them, because I would expect somebody to do that for me. Because there's nothing worse than finding out when you look in the mirror that there's something up and you're going to yourself, oh God, how many people have seen me since that was there and why didn't they tell me? And now I'm really embarrassed about something that happened there and may not have happened at all. It's a difficult one, isn't it? It's a difficult one. Anyway, just so you know, the member of the team didn't tell the person, so they could still have the thing stuck between their teeth. Driving from Dublin to Dingle, driving through Adair, it's like a summer's day, 17 degrees. Good afternoon. What's the traffic light like down in Adair? Isn't that a bottleneck down there? Have stocked up on Brennan's bread, Ray, just in case. That's what happened with Ophelia in the snow that time. No bread left. Did you ever hear this one? If you're in love with a heap of dung, you won't see a dirty straw in it. A great saying of my mother's. Now, I'll have to analyse that one. Let's take that and deconstruct it. If you're in love with a heap of dung, you won't see a dirty straw in it. I don't know. My late father used to say to us, when I'm not fishing, I'm mending my net. Always have something to do. Never be idle or bored. We were talking about... retirement yesterday, something we'll come back to, because the boss man in the ESRI, Alan Barrett, was saying that it should be a process and not an event. And he was suggesting to people, if at all possible, that they wean themselves off full-time work when they're retiring. Take the Monday off, take the Friday off, and then, ease yourself out of it, because it can be a huge shock to the system if you've been occupied, as in fishing and mending your nets for 40 years, and then nothing. All the sayings are coming in still. He's as clever as a lorry load of foxes. You see, the lorry, that's what they say in Kildare. You might say lorry in other parts of the country. We say donkey as well instead of donkey. He's that mean that he could peel an orange in his pocket. I love that one. That's Roman Cork. He's that mean that he could peel an orange in his pocket. If a crow had his brains, he would fly backwards, says Francis. And when anybody said to my mum, he fancies himself, she said, let him, because nobody else does. If he was chocolate, he'd eat himself. That is. There was a brilliant one in that vein, and it wasn't a phrase or a saying, but it was a description. Big-headed sure case. Remember that? And the worst thing you could be down the country was a big-headed sure case. I think that's something in our psyche, isn't it? I love RuPaul Drag Race. However, it's only going to be on BBC Three, which is digital channel. Think so? It won't be available to Irish viewers, says Jacinta. Murphy's Law states that it can go wrong. If it can go wrong, it will. Sod's Law states Murphy was an optimist. So there. And back in my heyday, when I was chatting up the older women in CP's nightclub in Galway, and if she said, "I'm too old for you," I would always respond by my mother's old saying, "Sure, the older the fiddle, the sweeter the tune." It always won their hearts, says Dave in Galway. What's your relationship status now, Dave? Let us know. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Tom Fletcher, we have Tom Fletcher on the show today, and Tom wasn't really on my radar, because when he was sort of topping the charts and writing songs for One Direction, etc., I was listening to other types of music. But he's a member of McFly, and he's gone on to be a very successful author of children's books, and his latest one is out, and we'll be talking to him about that. And he's interesting about his mental health and how he met his wife and all those things, and we'll be speaking to Tom Fletcher after 4 o'clock, and I know he has loads of Irish fans out there. Ray Darcy, you know, a person who tells lies and carrying stories, don't you know he'd put teeth in a hen? Bernadette Redmond, that's sort of the equivalent to like hen's teeth, isn't it? There's all that come along. If you fall in love with a dunghill, you won't see a dirty straw in it. A dunghill consists of dirty straw. It means love is blind, I suppose. Thanks, Bernadette. Thanks for explaining that for me. Thank you. Is there a book in that? There must be a book in that. Somebody's probably written a book. Have they compiled a book of old Irish sayings and done interpretations of them and all that? And then there's, you know, one thing would be said one way in Cork and it'd be said differently up in Donegal, but mean the same thing. So there'd be great contrast across the country. I'm sure somebody has done that. 51551ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. The great David Gray and A Tight Ship. And David's going to be in with us tomorrow. And we'll have a chat and he might sing us a song. Really looking forward to that. And then he's appearing on the telly then on Saturday night, and he's going to perform with the RTE Concert Orchestra, because they're going to be on the telly with us on Saturday night. And it always gives the show an energy, because they play us in and out of ad breaks and they play the opening sig, and it's just something very special about an orchestra of 51 people playing musical instruments. It's just something very wonderful and beautiful about it. Now, they got a face like the back of a bus. My dad used to say that, meaning somebody was less than good looking. Not a nice thing to say, Peter. I'm as weak as a June robin. My late father used to say when he was feeling ill. I would love to know the origin, Yvonne. Well, maybe robins, they're sort of not great during June, are they? They're probably winter birds. I don't know. There was a time when we used to do a programme and we used to look into the origins of sayings. And a lot of sayings, no, not that one, but a lot of sayings that you'd be familiar with come from sailing. 4 sheets to the wind comes from sailing. And that's what we used to do when there were books written about it. My late brother used to leave companies with this. He'd be going out the door and he'd say, "You can lead a horse to the seaside, but you can't make a frog out of a golf ball." Everyone would go, "What did he say? What does that mean? What did he say?" And it means nothing, says Des. He just say it and leave people thinking. And Rena is in Kanturk. How are you doing, Rena? And she says, "If my uncle ever saw a person who had aged prematurely in his eyes, he'd say, he has a head in him that looks like it wore out 2 bodies. That's great. Sure, you're no oil painting yourself. That's a very common one, isn't it? My mother used to say, worry is interest paid on a loan you haven't taken out. You see, now there's an important one. People are writing books on that and claiming that it's their idea and they're making millions on self-help books. You know, that we shouldn't be anxious about something that hasn't happened, and we shouldn't catastrophize and all those things, and perfectionism and all that. And that's, it's all summed up in that little thing there. Worry is interest paid on a loan you haven't taken out. So don't worry. Easier said than done. When a girl would refuse my dad a dance back in the day, he'd say to her, "Sorry, I didn't realize you couldn't dance." I don't know if that's the wittiest response now to somebody saying, "No, thank you." Neeson's. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. People don't ask people out to dance anymore. I remember when I was DJing down in the Derby House Hotel in Kildare, and it was Hearts Nightclub, and the DJ, it wasn't a DJ box, it was a stage, and the DJ was set up, I was set up on the stage, but the stage was such that you could sit on it, and when the slow side came, usually a line of girls would sit there, so four or five girls, you know, a group of friends, and they'd sit down there and they'd be sitting out the slow dance, and oftentimes I'd be observing what was going on while I was playing Eric Clapton's You Look Wonderful Tonight, and a guy would start on the right hand side and he'd go, excuse me, would you like to dance? She'd no thank you. Then he'd go to the next girl, excuse me, she'd like that, and he'd make his way, fair juice him, he'd go all through all five and ask them all out to dance, and they'd all say no, and then he'd travel back across the empty dance floor with his tail between his legs. And that's very sad, but that's the way it used to happen. A man will chase a woman until she catches him. You get that one? And would live on the shavings of tin, for someone who still has their communion money. Yeah. If he dropped a penny, it'd hit him on the back of the head. That's my favourite one on that. If he dropped a penny, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of sayings that refer to people who are a bit mean with their money, a bit tight with their money. A new saying, there's a day for everything and everything gets its day, but maybe not today. He takes the head clean off the father. He looks like the father, Kevin O'Mullen, yeah. A bear with sore eyes wouldn't hug her. There's an end to everything and two to a sausage. They're getting ridiculous now. That fella is so cute, he'd live in your ear and let the other one out in flats. And show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are. You see, that's an astute comment, isn't it? Show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are. You can't make a racehorse out of a donkey. Yeah, with all the crossbreeding in the world and genetic modification, you can't make a racehorse out of a donkey. 51551 RAID.RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551. Now, this day last week, we spoke to Canadian woman Kirsten Chadwick, and Kirsten told us the tragic story of her fiancé, Kim. Kim was scuba diving off the coast of Cork around the Lusitania shipwreck, and something happened, and he's been left paralysed. And Kirsten talked to us then, she talked to us again, and she appealed to people to help her get Kim back to Canada. And that's not a straightforward thing, because to get him in his condition back to Canada, they have to get an air ambulance, which is a very costly thing. But you have been brilliant. You have been brilliant, and you've reached out and you've given Kim and Kirsten a big Irish financial hug. And still, even this morning, there were, a cheque for €250 came in to help. There you go. They're still coming in, and Kirsten's on the line now. How are you, Kirsten?
Oh, I'm well, Ray.
Yeah, and some news for us, big news.
Some really wonderful news. Should I tell everyone now, I suppose? I'm currently in the taxi on the way to meet Kim at the air ambulance in Shannon.
And where is he?
He's in the ambulance. He's ahead of us. They have the blue lights on, and they're going as he would be still considered a critical transfer.
Right, okay. When did all this happen? When did you know it was going to happen?
Well, when I had spoken to you on Monday, Ray, we had just caught wind of the news that an individual, a patient, was being transferred from Canada to Galway, and which is one in a million, as all of the doctors have told me. And so the ball really started rolling then, but nothing was really confirmed until Tuesday late at night at around actually 1 a.m. Monday morning, there was a bed confirmed in Canada. So Wednesday, really, it came down to transferring the funds for the air ambulance. And once that was completed, which was a bit of a hassle as well, but once that got sorted at 6 p.m. yesterday, it was confirmed that we would be ready to transfer today.
And they wouldn't have provided the service for you without the transfer of funds.
Sorry, could you say that again?
They wouldn't have provided the service to you without the transfer of funds.
No, the amount had to be paid in full, and that they had to see that landed in their account before they would be willing to transfer. Yes.
Yeah, anyway, this is a good news story, so I won't go into that, the fact that they had flown from Canada and probably had to fly back anyway, but there you go. So this is brilliant then, isn't it?
Oh, it's just... it's so wonderful, and it just wouldn't be possible without you and the help of everybody at RTE. I reached out yesterday, actually, to Neil at 10 a.m. before it was fully confirmed, because I wanted to say to him, thank you so much, and thank you to everybody at RTE for all of their support, because really, Ray, when you look at the GoFundMe, like I said on Monday, all of those donations are coming from Ireland, and Kim actually requested yesterday, you know, don't tell anybody we're coming home except for Ireland. Tell everybody in Ireland, thank you for sending me home.
Yeah.
So none of our family know. We really wanted you to be the first to know, and to let all of Ireland know that we're going home.
And it's thanks to the generosity of the people who were listening to the show and read about you in the Irish Times and saw you on the 6-1 News. And like, as I said the other day, I'm just hugely proud of Ireland. We're very good at this sort of thing. it's amazing. How does Kim feel? Because he's still in critical condition, is he?
So he wouldn't be considered critical just because he is stable.
You're right.
But so he is alert and aware of what's happening, and I think Kim and I are both kind of keeping ourselves very neutral, not really letting ourselves get excited. Obviously, there's a storm coming in and all of these different variables, and really, this is just a new chapter on the journey for Kim and I. We are being repatriated to another ICU in Canada, so it's just really another development and another step. So I think we are very grateful, and that would be really how we're both feeling, is grateful and thankful. And for myself, I'm feeling really sort of confident. I think going through all of this, despite how incredulous it might be that Kim didn't have insurance, the fact that he didn't means that I've had a huge learning opportunity, and I've been able to go back to Canada with this new sense of confidence that I can take care of Kim and I. And so I really am, in a way, grateful and thankful.
And they made a lot of that in the Canadian news that Kim didn't have insurance.
Yeah, you know, it's something that I am trying to be sort of observed about, just because I don't want to... I think, you know, I really think that before all of this, I can't say I would or wouldn't have, but I think maybe I would have felt similarly to those people. How could you not have insurance? But I say to everyone that, you know, being able to say that, you know, you come from a place of privilege to be able to look at my misfortune and Kim's misfortune and say, would have, could have, should have, because a lot of the coverage in the media, the response to that and the comments have been, you know, really focused on the financial repercussions of not having insurance and really how Kim was complacent in doing so, which is, well, it is understandable, but just not really helpful at this time, I suppose. Not supportive.
And for people who didn't hear you last week, like, Kim is an accomplished diver, and this was, he planned this to be his last big dive that he'd have to train for. He would do diving, obviously, but this was his last planned big dive on his bucket list.
Yeah, this was the end of Kim's bucket list, the last sort of major lost liner that he was going to dive, the last major shipwreck. He'd done quite an extensive amount of dives previous, and I mean, he's got the Medal of Bravery, like we discussed last week. I was telling the gentleman who's driving me to the airport how Kim's can be accredited to a lot, to discovering a lot of the underwater cave systems in Canada. He's quite an elite diver, extensive background. He mapped out the tectonic plates in Þingvellir Park outside of Reykjavik. So he's done quite a bit of diving.
Yes, he's very accomplished.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, assuming that the storm Lorenzo won't stop you taking off and you'll return to Canada, who will be there to greet you when you get back?
Well, oh yes. You know, since nobody really knows we're coming, I had to sort of reach out secretly to my best friend and say, hey, I might be arriving at a ridiculous hour, but would you be able to pick me up? So I think we'll just be greeted by the hospital staff and then my good friend to take me home, but mostly be greeted by my cat and my two fish.
Right. What are your two fish called?
We have Albert, so Bert, Prince Albert is what we like to call him, and Nigel.
Right.
And we caught him in our lake.
Okay. So Kim then is put into an ICU unit, and well, that's tautology, an ICU unit in Canada when he gets over there. And what are they saying? How long will he be in hospital, and when will he get home?
It all just depends on how quickly Kim can come off of this high flow oxygen. And so once he's off of that and the trachea, he can still have a trachea in. It's looking like Kim won't need that. But once he's off the oxygen and he's not dependent or ventilator dependent, even though this is not a ventilator, once he's not on any machines, we can look at being able to be sent to rehab. So we will probably be on a wait list for that. And then we'll be transferred to Lyndhurst in Toronto, which is our rehab facility.
Okay. Well, we won't be speaking to you now for some time. We'll let you get home and get settled, and then we'll ring in a few weeks' time. But just finally, before we let you go, what would you like to say to the people who are listening?
I just want to reach out and say that this would not be possible with so many people, not just the staff, not just the lovely woman at the B&B who's taking care of me all this way, my boss, the support of our family and friends, but most importantly, for all of the people in Ireland who have families, who have their own priorities, their own obligations, their own lives, just regular people who went home and thought of us and really took the time to donate. This is the only reason why we are going home, and we will absolutely never forget Ireland. Kim and I already said we are going to hang an Irish flag right underneath our Canadian flag on our flagpole as soon as we get home. So you will always be in our hearts.
Okay. Safe travelling and mind yourself and Kim, and we'll keep in touch and speak to you in a few weeks' time, Kirsten.
Certainly, Ray. We will absolutely. My number will obviously change, but I will reach out and make sure we're all in contact.
Okay. Mind yourself. Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551 or RaidRT.ie. Now, earlier this year, we had the president of DCU, Breen McGrath, on, and he was telling us about a new, not a competition, but a new campaign they were running to find teachers around the country who were inspirational. And he put out the call, and you might have heard the ads on the radio, and there were ads in papers as well. And there were entries from all over the country. Well, tomorrow night, the 20 shortlisted teachers and their nominators will gather in the Helix out in DCU, and the top teachers from each of the provinces will be announced. But all 20 have done really well. And we have one of the shortlisters here. We have Anne Moriarty. How are you doing, Anne?
I'm great, thank you.
And we have the person who nominated Anne, Phyllis Lawler. How are you doing, Phyllis?
I'm great, thank you.
Now, ye are probably unique in that the pupil is older than the teacher. Would that make you unique? It wouldn't make you unique.
Yes.
Because I think in all the other 20 shortlisted, the pupils are younger than the teacher. That's the way it is traditionally.
Yeah.
So who's going to explain yourselves then? Phyllis, you nominated Anne. Go on.
I nominated Anne because she's opened up a whole new world for people my age and a little bit younger and some older.
Right. What age are you?
I'm 77.
Okay.
77.
Okay. And when did you first meet Anne?
Approximately 4 years ago, I got this gift of an iPad, and I looked at it, knew a little bit about it, but not a lot.
Who'd you get it from?
My son in Australia sent it to me for a Christmas present.
Why? What did he think you were going to do with it?
Well, I had a laptop, and I just knew the basics.
Right.
And I used to Skype him, but he came home, and he had this iPad with him on his holidays. He says, Mom, you have to have one of these. Next time, I'm going to get you one of these. I said, but why, when I have this, I can Skype you?
Yeah.
He says, no, this, I live here in Australia. You and Dad live at home. So we're going to have to be with each other, face to face, regularly.
FaceTime. You'd never heard of FaceTime before.
I had never heard of FaceTime. Right. It is the most brilliant thing ever.
And was there a big family event coming up that he wanted to FaceTime you on? No.
No, it's just he's there without family, just with his wife, who doesn't have, only has one sister, and all his family, his cousins, everybody's here at home.
Right.
So he said, this way, I can see you at home, I can see the house, I can see the garden, you can see my house and my garden, and
Of course, with the laptop, you're sort of restricted to the desk.
Yes.
You can't move around with it.
So I have this iPad and I go all around my house
right.
and he goes around his and we see each other.
Okay.
And we're part of each other's lives.
But when you got it first...
I looked at it and I said, why did you send me this? You're complicating things for me. He said, look, you may be in your 70s, but you're not stupid. You already know how to do emails and you can Skype. So I'll lead you through a few things, which he did, but meant nothing. He's
right.
there.
Yeah.
So one morning in the gym, I was talking to a lady on the treadmill beside me, and she says, I'm after getting this new phone, and I really don't know what to do with it. She says, I'll have to contact Anne. And I said, who's this Anne? And I said, well, look, I've a new iPad, and I'm really not getting the best use out of it. So she says, well, look, my husband did a course with Anne, gave me Anne's name, gave me a phone number. She says, she's in Terranure. Why don't you give her a call and maybe do some of her classes? Hey, presto, I joined up 4 years ago and I'm still there.
Anne Moriarty.
Yeah.
Superhero.
Maybe.
Yeah. What's the name of your class?
The group is called Smart Agers.
Right.
We officially founded it about 2 years ago. And it is just based around that. It's people, we did say people over the age of 55, but actually we have a few sneaking in under the bar sometimes. But it is just about introducing people to smart technology, not necessarily how to use a computer, because as Phyllis said, she knew how to send an email. But it's kind of doing it for themselves, using new technology, smart devices. It's promoting their independence. We're living longer, you know, we're living more independent lives. So this was a way of bringing tech on board so that they felt safer, secure, included.
Is it a privately run thing?
It's not really private. No, it's not. It's kind of a community
effort.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We started in Terranure, we're in Rathgar, it's spreading out now, more people are coming on board.
Yeah.
So it's great. You know, we've people coming up from Clare, Kilkenny,
right.
Leash, you know, it's great.
So Anne's class has opened up the world of technology to you,
yes,
Phyllis.
Yeah. I do my banking online, I book hotels, flights, I do all my documents, Google Docs, Google Drive. All of that's open to me now, where before I didn't know any of that.
Mm.
And a simple little thing on the iPhone, like Dublin bus. I don't have to stand there wondering when my bus is going to come anymore. I can just click on it.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that. I can click on that and see when my bus is coming.
Because technology gets a bad rap.
Yeah, it
justifiably
does.
So, in some respect.
It does. Well,
it seems that it has really embellished your life.
It has. It's opened up. Really, it has made me much more confident than I was about going out, looking for stuff, talking to people. Even an incident the other day, an old school friend says, you know, I was telling her about this teacher Inspire, and she says, oh, do you know anything about the iPhone? I said, well, yes, I've done a class with Anne, and the iPhone and the iPad. She says, but I've got all these apps and they're spread all over the place. I said, but put them all together. She said, but how do I do that? So this, I'm teaching this, and I'm showing her how to put all her apps together, put them into folders. I said, it's really quite simple. She says, yes, but you had somebody to show you.
See, it's simple when you know how. It's simple when you know how.
Yes, and before I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah, yeah. So what is it about, Anne? Because, you know, teachers teach us and they pass on information. That's functional teaching. But then other teachers inspire.
She doesn't do that.
No.
She doesn't do that. She's passionate about her subject, but she's also passionate about her students. Each one of us in that class at the moment is about 16 or 18.
In your class, yeah.
And each one of them, she wants to bring us with her. She wants us to get as much as possible out of our devices. And I'm speaking for the rest of the ladies in this class. At the moment, it's all ladies, but we do occasionally have the odd
gentleman. Why do you think that's the case? Is it the same way as men are afraid to ask for directions when they're lost?
I think so. Yeah. They do. Yeah, I think that's it. But it's a lovely atmosphere. Anne has created this atmosphere in that room that we don't feel if we have to ask her to explain something over and over again, that we're asking silly questions. She'd say, no. Am I making myself clear? And if you put your hand up and say, no, Anne, you've lost me, she'll go back over it all again.
Yeah.
That's why she's so special.
And it is a generational thing, isn't it? Because now, from now on, You know, I see my children. And
they grandchildren.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I suppose some people feel intimidated by technology still.
That's exactly it. It is. It's fear. That's all it is. There's smart tech is the easiest thing in the world to use. And you're right, it does get a bad rep sometimes. And justifiably, there's a that side to it. But there's also the amazing side to it. I mean, the possibilities it opens up for
people. Endless.
Yeah. I mean, what it can do for people, you know, living alone, making them included, you know, as people are getting older, using it to monitor their health, monitor finances. You can't find a bank anymore. You can't pay your motor tax. Yeah. Everything is online. You're being pushed to do it.
Yes.
And there's a fear there. But I, like you, I would have said this is a generational thing. But we're getting younger and younger people coming to us all the time. I had a class the other day and I had an 85-year-old teaching a 16-year-old how to create an email address and play solitaire.
And I believe you had an incident in a shop where you were telling a young lad.
Anne had been telling us about these smart little, they're like trackers, tiles, and you can put one in your handbag or in your car or whatever.
Oh, so you don't lose it.
You don't lose it. Yeah. So I go into a store and I ask at the desk, and he says, I don't think we have anything like that. I said, are you sure? So he said, no, I've never heard of them. So I go down to the accessories part of the store and I see them on a stand. So I pick them up and I knew what I'm looking for because Anne had told me.
Yeah.
Told us. So I go back up to the desk with them and I said, by the way, you do have them. Oh, he said, I didn't know that, but what do they do?
He asked you.
Yes, and I'm talking about maybe a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's what they do. You can keep a track of your, you can find things. I told him about them and he says, oh, I see, I didn't know that. I said, well, you know now.
Yes.
And I felt good.
And confident.
Confident that I could tell him how he could go about things.
Yes. Did you give him man's number? he needs to go to the class, doesn't he?
He needs to go to the classes, yeah.
Thanks to Anne and the Smart Agers, I am using my iPad on a daily basis. Please let Anne know I am stuck on my homework for next Monday. Good luck to Anne and Phyllis tomorrow. That's Ellen.
Ellen,
And I was given an iPad when I retired 5 years ago and hadn't a clue what to do with it until somebody told me about Anne's classes. I was blown away from day one with her teaching skills and endless patience. She's an inspiration to everyone who meets her. And I know everybody in her class agree. My iPad is now part of my daily life and has opened up a whole new world for me. We can contact her anytime, day or night, and she will answer any of our questions. She is now not just a teacher, but a friend to us all. And I have made so many friends through her classes. That's Mina.
Mina. Well, that's so true.
And do people ring up at night?
They can do,
and send her emails.
We have an email. It's like a hotline. We have a WhatsApp group called the Ninjas.
Right.
iPad Ninjas. We have an email for the group. And one of the students, one of the rare men who come along, actually we have a few men, they're getting better. He's just come down a mountain in India and he's somewhere in South Vietnam at the moment. And he sent me an email about 5 o'clock the other morning to say he was trying to use his prepaid credit cards. We would be big into prepaid credit cards for online.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't tap. So it was great. We were able to send him the instruction.
5 o'clock in the morning, yes. You're committed.
I love it, and I really do. They are the best group. I'm so lucky to spend time with this.
Here's another one. Siobhan's my name, and I'm a smart ager in Anne's classes. And I just want to say that I am one. She is a national treasure. We love her to bits, and she has empowered us all with technology and make us feel that we are still part of the world and can still keep up with our children and the world. No ageism in Anne's class. She really deserves this award. She's a born teacher. With endless patience. And Anne is an absolute wonderful teacher. She has endless patience, is always kind and very understanding. I can endorse all that has been said, says Linda McCool. They're all coming in there. did you see the birth of a grandchild on your...
Oh, I did. Wasn't that amazing? I did. It was in the earlier days when I wasn't so long in the class and I was getting to grips with FaceTime. And my son in Australia, his wife was expecting a baby. And on the way to the hospital... He phones me or he FaceTimes me and he says, Mom, it was nighttime for me, morning time for him. And he says, Mom, you have to come along on this experience with us because he's there with no family, just his wife and his mother-in-law. So I'm sitting up in bed, 12 o'clock at night with the iPad on my lap and I'm travelling to the hospital in Sydney while they're going along and the excitement and the worry and everything else. And my husband and I, we're part of this sitting up in bed in Dublin. So then we lose them for an hour while they have to get to the hospital. And then after a while, he FaceTimes back from the delivery room. This baby had been born.
Right.
And we're watching him cutting the umbilical cord. Now, that is the beauty of the internet.
Yes, that is special.
Oh, we were there in that room. He wanted us to be part of that experience.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Yeah. Absolutely
amazing.
Very
special. You miss him. You must miss him.
Yes, but he's on every couple of days. We FaceTime this little baby that was born there. We call him our iPad baby. He FaceTimes me. He's 3 and a half now.
Right.
He FaceTimes me every weekend.
Does he call you granny or nanny or what?
Nanny.
Nanny.
And he press the button and he uses, well, his dad's in tech, in the IT. So this little guy, he FaceTimes me.
Brilliant. So tomorrow night, big hoo-ha, big do out in the Helix.
She's already a winner.
Goonawling. Have you got a goonawling? You do goonawling. So enjoy it and well done. And I'm sure you'll enjoy the night. And well done to all 20 teachers who have been shortlisted.
Indeed.
And that's the Teachers Inspire. It's a good idea. It's a good initiative, isn't it?
It's a great initiative, and I think
it's going to become
really
an annual one.
Yes, it is.
Well done, Anne.
Thank you. Thanks a million.
Really lovely to meet you, Phyllis.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551 for texts, or ray@rte.ie for emails. Now, to get the official update on Storm Lorenzo, we're joined on the line now by Deirdre Lowe from Met Éireann. How are you doing, Deirdre?
Hi, I'm not too bad. Busy here.
I'd imagine you are. So it's coming closer and closer, so the information you have is more reliable as we get closer.
It is, although it looks like it's slowing down now, so it's going to... We're not expecting it to make landfall until about 5 or 6 in the morning in the northwest, somewhere between Killala Bay and Donegal Bay, probably more closer to Donegal Bay. And then it's going to track over the country during tomorrow morning, weakening very much so as it does. But it is going to get extremely windy still along the west coast, winds gusting up to 110, 120 kilometres per hour, tending to be more knife from a west to northwest direction, and that's a bad direction for Galway Bay. We're also going to include Leitrim and Sligo in some warnings as well, and those very high seas are going to continue through the night hours until tomorrow morning. The sea's up to between 6 and 9 metres off the Connacht coast.
So it appears now from what you're saying that it's going to go up a bit and then turn back down at a slight angle, is it?
It is. It's reluctant to take that turn, but the models are predicting that it will come in over Ireland. It's a very unusual storm in this respect. Most storms track northeastwards, you know, from the southwest in a steady line, and that's been the problem from the first sighting of the hurricane in the South Atlantic, that as it came close to Ireland there were several possible tracks it could take.
So you're saying it's not going to hit land until sometime during the night?
That's correct.
The
early hours of the morning, possibly even 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right. And you say it has slowed down. Does that mean that the winds won't be as damaging?
That's a possibility as it stagnates over the sea. It's a possibility they won't be quite as severe as we were thinking earlier, but still there'll be an orange warning in force along the west coast, particularly coastal fringes of Ireland will be extremely windy, with gusts still up to 120 kilometres per hour. Over the bulk of Ireland, the north and east of Ireland, we're not expecting any severe winds.
Okay.
It is going to get pretty windy to the south of the low, winds into the yellow category with gusts up to 100 kilometres per hour.
Where is that now?
That will be South Leinster and Munster.
Okay.
And off the southeast coast tomorrow morning, the winds will be up to certainly gale force, possibly strong gale force. So, you know, it is going to be a windy night to the south of the low, but it is weakening considerably. But it is also, I should mention, bringing the potential for some heavy downpours of rain, which could be a problem as the rivers are quite high. So there will be rainfall warnings in force as well, particularly in the northwest of the country.
Okay. And like, I know this is a thing that I'm concerned about. I'm sure there's loads of people say trampolines.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous night for trampolines, is it?
It is along the west coast.
Yes,
if you live in the Alka Islands or the Aran Islands, you know, it's going to be very bad there. It's, you know, very exposed. And Kerry and Limerick, Clare, all the way up the West Coast.
Okay, thanks very much, Deirdre Lowe in Met Aaron. Deirdre mentioned Achill Island there. Just very quickly, Sean Molloy is out there in Achill. We spoke to Sean before. You have about 30 seconds, Sean. It hasn't hit there yet, has it?
It hasn't hit there, but I've been watching the sea for the last 20 minutes or so, and I can see the waves rising quite considerably, and they're really coming in fast and furious at the moment where I am in the village of Dua. One thing I'm just glad to hear her say there, that it won't be that bad until about 5 in the morning, because it's low tide at the moment, and if it was to hit at high tide here, I'd say there would be quite a considerable amount of damage done.
Okay, right. And the school has been closed there at 1:30, just precautionary measure.
The school has been closed. A few things cancelled tonight. Just, I suppose, precautionary measures. Yeah.
Okay, we'll speak to you again, Sean. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks. That's Sean Molloy in Achill Island there. And Ish, 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Now, you know Tom Fletcher, if you're a certain age, from being part of the band McFly. He and his wife Giovanni have well over 1 million followers on Instagram and a massive following across social media. Tom is a children's author as well. Now, you may not know that unless you have children of a certain age. His book, The Christmasaurus, was a big hit last year, and now it's the follow-up, The Christmasaurus and the Winter Witch, is out today. And there's another book, There's an Elf in Your Book, which is coming out closer to the end of the month. And Tom is in his studio in England. London, is it, Tom?
It is London, yes.
And good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Great, great. You're a very busy man. Where do you get the time? And you have 3 young boys.
I have, yeah. I've got a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. So to be honest, I have no idea how to do anything. It's just, when I actually think about it, it's impossible. But you just, you know, you get your head down and get it done, don't you?
Yeah. So McFly started when you were 18. You're now 34.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So time has flown by.
16 years ago. And McFly, I see, are back touring next year.
We are, yeah. We're all back together. We've had this kind of, we had a bit of a hiatus for a few years, which we didn't really plan. So it's, yeah, it feels very nice to all be back together. Mm. So we're like brothers, you know, we love each other like brothers and we fight like brothers. And so it's, you know, it's been a long relationship and we've been through a lot together. Like everything in your life, you know, you go through so much. Well, Dougie was 15 when we started. So from, you know, being in your mid-teens into your mid-30s, that's the defining years of your life, really. Mm. And we've experienced all of that together. So it's, yeah, we're looking forward to getting back on stage.
And that can mess you up as well, can't you? Because you're not allowed to do the normal things that, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds might get up to.
Yeah, I guess so. But I think you do live in a real bubble. And I think through all of it, we always had each other. We were a real tight unit. And that was the kind of the thing that got us through those. Because, you know, it's an amazing job that is, you know, 1 in a billion chance to get this opportunity to do. But it is difficult, you know, especially in your teens and going through what every, you know, young men go through. It is, you know, challenging. But we always supported each other through all of those things. And it is the best job in the world. We love it. Being on stage with your mates, performing music that you've written is incredible.
How does it compare to writing books and seeing the finished product?
Well, it's kind of in a selfish way, you know, you kind of, it's just on your own when you're writing a book. It's very, you know, you're isolated. You just get to, you do it. You don't have to worry about your bandmates, what your bandmates think, which is nice sometimes. So it's, and you know, you get to kind of, I get to write about Christmas and dinosaurs, which are things that I love. And writing for kids, you know, what it's like, we've both got kids. And so writing something that your kids can appreciate is really good fun.
And where does your love of Christmas come from? It's nearly an obsession, is it?
Yeah, I guess from my parents. Like my, I always had magical Christmases as a kid, and I've got a sister who's 7 years younger. So I think the magic of Christmas was really kept alive in my house, and it just kind of stayed with me. And now I live at like eternal Christmas all year round because I'm writing these Christmas books.
Yes, that's it. I saw the launch of this book, and it was, you sent 3 elves out to the Blackpool Pier.
Yep, in the summer.
In July, yes, they got some weird looks. And when did you think to yourself, I could actually write a book?
I'd always wanted to do it, and I'd been writing kids' picture books for quite a while, and they were very similar to writing music. You know, I've been writing songs since I was 15, 16, and writing the picture books felt very similar to that, and I always had aspirations to write a novel, and my wife had been writing novels for a while, and I think I just annoyed her so much by saying, I want to write a novel. And so she just, you know, gave me the kind of kick up the bum that I needed to actually sit down and do it, and said, you know, no one's going to write it for you. And so I just thought, well, what am I going to write about? And the things that I loved, you know, I grew up loving dinosaurs, dinosaurs, and I loved Christmas. I just thought, well, that's my starting place.
Yeah.
And it just went from there. And actually, it is, even writing the novels, it's a similar process to writing a book, really, writing a song, really. It's very similar to writing music. It just takes a bit longer.
A lot longer, I would say.
Yeah.
Listen, congratulations. I've read about 50 pages. I love your style of writing.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, and you're sort of a child at heart, aren't you? Because you can really get inside the brain of a child.
Well, I think that's kind of your responsibility, I think, as a kid's author, is because it's really easy to talk down to kids, you know, as an adult, especially the kids that, you know, this book's aimed at 7 to 12 year olds, roughly. And I think it's really easy to be patronising as an adult to them. And, you know, I try to, you know, just remember who I was when I was a kid and speak like I'm a kid. And it's really fun to do that. And also try and just speak like, you know, you're an author telling, you're someone telling a story, you know, it's not, and put my voice into it. So
yes,
it's really good fun.
So it's very conversational,
like they're just having someone, tell them a story and make it fun and interesting and exciting.
And the hero, William Trundle, is in a wheelchair.
He is, he's a young wheelchair user.
And was that important for you to do that?
Well, it was just this image that I had. I thought I had this image of a dinosaur pulling a young boy in a wheelchair across the sky in the same way that Santa's reindeer pull a sleigh. And that was, I had no reason to really write that. I don't know why it popped in my head, but I just thought they're two characters that I want to know more about. You know, why are they together? And it led me on this whole journey to realize that, you know, young children, especially with disabilities, aren't really represented in the media in general, especially in fiction. And I didn't really know any wheelchair users at the time. And so it led me on. I did all this research with some wheelchair charities, and it just really opened my eyes to this whole new world. And so it's been a real learning experience for me. And it was something I'm very proud of now to be, you know, patron of a charity, WizKids, who helped me do all the research and really, you know, have a character, a main character in a children's book that is, you know, his whole struggle is that he's perceived to be different, and his discovery is that is what makes him amazing and makes him extremely special.
Not just a book, but a very successful book. Like, the first book sold nearly 500,000. You must have got reaction then from families of you know, families who have children in wheelchairs, or did you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been amazing. And, you know, and because along the writing process, I went and spoke with a lot of young wheelchair users to hear their stories. And it was really important to me that, you know, it wasn't something I was guessing at. It's something that I did, and I did it properly. And so then, yeah, to get that reaction back and to, you know, get letters from kids who say, I love your story because you've written about someone who's like me. That is incredibly special. And something I'm very proud of. What's been amazing about writing the sequel is that character already, you know, exists, and everyone is kind of aware of his backstory. And now I could just get to have fun and he's just going on an adventure. It's less focused on him and his disability, and it's just about a kid going on an adventure, which is, you know, an amazing thing to be able to do now, to already have a universe with characters in that I can just play with. It's really good fun.
Yeah. This isn't spoiler alert, because it happens in the first few pages, but the Winter Witch, she can control time, and
she can.
In the first few pages, our hero ends up in the future. And wait for this, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, in the future, there is no Christmas. what a brilliant thought, because that's going to scare the living daylights out of a lot of children.
Well, yeah, I just thought, you know, what's the worst thing you could see in the future? And, you know, for William in the Christmas Aurus would be to see that the Christmas doesn't exist. And then that sets them on this, you know, this whole adventure of trying to stop those events from happening, which is, you know, essentially what the book is about, trying to prevent this future from coming true when Christmas doesn't exist.
And then you have the dynamic of the family, which is a blended family. So William and his dad, Bob, they're living together now with Bob's girlfriend, Pamela, and her daughter, Brenda. And Brenda and William are around the same age. People get to know that. The brilliant thing I think about the book is I love when you refer to Santa Claus as his merriness. And then when he's talking to people, he's, you know, because I know people who say correct, you know, when you say something to them that's right.
Uh-huh.
And Santa says correctmas.
yeah. Well, what's really fun about Christmas, it's something we're all so familiar with. So it gives you this kind of freedom to be able to kind of play with it. You know, it's something we all know, the Christmas traditions, and it's something that then you can kind of put your own twist on and or give a new reason to. You know, we know what we all eat at Christmas, for example, or maybe you can go in and have fun with the reason why we eat those things, or like give your version of Christmas. So that was really fun for me to kind of get to play around with.
I don't know if this is a cheat or not, Tom, but at the end of the book, and it's going to sell hundreds of thousands, you've written a letter to Santa. It's sort of to ingratiate yourself with the man in red.
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
Always, every year.
It's a bit of a cheat. You're going to get preferential treatment.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think I'm on the naughty list.
I doubt it very much. Tell us a bit about yourself and Giovanna. Is that how she pronounced it, Giovanna?
Yeah, Giovanna. Yeah, that's right.
Giovanna.
Yeah,
you've been together since when?
Since we were kids. We met at school. So we met when we were 13. And I asked her out to be my girlfriend on the first day that I met her. And then I broke up with her 2 days later and then spent about 2 years trying to get her to go back out with me, which worked eventually. You know, we eventually, you know, got back together, and we now have three, you know, beautiful kids. And we know each other better than anyone. And she, you know, she's extremely creative and driven. So I think we inspire each other and push each other to do bigger and better things and work with each other. We write books with each other as well. So it's an amazing, you know, friendship and relationship.
I don't know if you've heard of Maeve Binchy. She's one of our greatest writers, and herself and her husband, Gordon Snell, he writes books for children here.
Right.
They made a lovely documentary about their working and living arrangements before Maeve died. And they had an arrangement that they would read each other's work, but then they could criticise it. But then the person had only 10 minutes to sulk, and then they have to forget about it and move on.
I like that rule.
Yeah. What way do you work when you're criticising or critiquing each other's work?
Yeah, it's a bit longer than 10 minutes, I'm afraid. Right. Yeah, the sulking. Well, it's, you know, working, we'd never worked with each other. We'd both written books separately, and then we started writing a trilogy, a YA trilogy together. It's a new dynamic. Obviously, I'm used to kind of people criticising my songs, and being in a band is very collaborative, and your bandmates can kind of tear your work apart. But she'd not really worked in that environment before, so it was definitely a new kind of experience in our very long relationship, starting to write a book with each other. But it's been going amazingly well, and we really enjoy it.
In reading about you, I was not shocked, but I was taken aback to discover that you've suffered with depression over the years, because, you know, we've been talking now for 10 or 15 minutes and people will have heard all you've achieved in your life and how successful you've been, how happy you are with your three kids and Giovanni and all that. And it's, I suppose it's that thing that people looking in on other people's worlds, they assume that everything's okay.
Yeah, definitely. And this, even more, you know, when you're in the public eye, you know, you are, you know, quite often you're in an interview like now, or you're on TV, and you're only here for a few minutes, and you're usually, you know, you're promoting something and you're, you know, trying to get your message across and what you're talking about. So you don't really get a chance to see the true person. And of course, like anyone in any walk of life, people go through depression and anxiety and, you know, so many, you know, different mental health issues. And it's often the people who you least expect are going through the toughest time. It's something that's, and obviously I think we're in a really great time now where people are more open, especially young men are more open about talking about these issues. Over the years, you know, when you grow up, when you're 18 and in the public eye, there's a lot of things that are kind of difficult to deal with. It's definitely been ups and downs along the way. And actually having kids was one of the best things that ever happened to me in that sense, that it really gave me the motivation to get myself sorted out. And it's been just the most amazing experience since then at sorting out my mental health and making sure that I'm in a great place so I can be the best dad that I can be.
And how do you mind yourself mentally?
Well, now I think once you start to recognise, because the hardest bit is realising that actually what's going on in your head might not actually be, you know, what is normal, if that's probably not the best word to use, but, you know, maybe there's something more going on, and understanding that, and then reaching, just speaking to someone about it. If you're struggling, the best thing you can do is speaking to someone, and that's the hardest thing. Once you open those doors, it's, you know, it gets easier and easier and easier, but the hardest bit is that first step. Obviously having a good support network around you is so incredibly important.
I read that that you were struggling yourself, and then you saw an interview that Stephen Fry did, and him telling his story about his mental health resonated with you.
Well, he was talking about his own mental health and his struggles with depression and bipolar, and it was literally like he just described my brain, and it was this amazing, I mean, it made me cry when I watched it, because I just thought, you've literally just described my life, and I'd never, and up until that point I hadn't really thought about the things I was going through, about speaking to anyone about it. And it just happened the stars kind of aligned, I guess, at that time. It was a particularly difficult time. And when I saw that documentary, so it was just the perfect timing for me to then realise actually maybe something more is going on and I should tell someone about it before it gets any worse.
And is it because you're obviously very prolific in everything you do? Is that a sort of a manic state? Does that come from that, or is there an even keel?
Yeah, and it's something that I was worried about, you know, that, you know, in going to kind of get help, that I didn't want to change I love the buzz and the excitement you get from being creative, and I was worried that, you know, is that something that's part of being bipolar and something that's being part of that condition that I would never want to lose? You know, I was worried that I was going to, by sorting out the difficult stuff, I was going to get rid of the creative stuff. But I guess it's just about learn. You know, there's no black or white when it comes to mental health. I think that's my discovery, and everything is personal to your own experience, and it's about learning how to manage that.
But that is fascinating that you were fearful that this was, you know, part of you, and changed you in any way, that you might change the creative process.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I definitely didn't want to get rid of that. But, you know, it's a long process. You know, understanding the way that your mind works is a, you know, it will continue to be a long journey. I don't think you'll ever kind of fully understand it. You just have to kind of, you know, live with it and do the best that you can.
I saw that very cute video of the three lads recording. Was it Shotgun by George Ezra?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You've all the gear at home, so they had an advantage again.
Well, yeah, so that's my like my writing room where I write my books and my music, and right. It has also become the kind of playroom for the kids. They always end up in there and fill it with their toys. And my eldest just kept saying, I want to record an album. I want to record an album. And they all got chicken pox over the summer, so we were kind of stuck inside. I thought, well, okay, let's do it now then. And they were like, what was amazing, it's obviously lovely when your kids take an interest in what you do, but then he was really good and he sang amazingly, so it was it became our song of the summer.
So Buzz was on lead vocals, was he? And Buddy,
Buzz the lead singer, yeah. And then Buddy was on, he's the 3-year-old, he was on drums, yeah. And doing a bit of backup vocals every now and then,
and then
the 1-year-old was the engineer, I think.
<He's> Yeah, very cute. And would you, what about, you know, because your experience has been in the main very positive of the music industry, so would you encourage them or discourage them from following in your footsteps?
I will encourage whatever they want to do in their life. You know, my parents, you know, were so supportive of me, but it was my decision to do, you know, the career that I've got. And and I started when I was 9. You know, I was in the West End in shows, in theatre, because that's what I wanted, and I made that decision. My parents just supported it. So, and I feel the same with my kids. If they wanted to do something similar to what I do, amazing, and I will fully support that. If not, you know, my middle kid is really into sport and football, which I know nothing about.
Buddy.
But, you know, and I would love him to do whatever, you know, they're discovering the people, they will discover who they are and what they want to do, and I'll be there to help them out.
So there is a bit of confusion, because I said you were coming on and people were excited, and then some of the people, I mentioned your name, just said, oh, he's in Busted, isn't he? No, he's in McFly.
Well, the thing is, like, the way McFly started was I auditioned for Busted and didn't get in, and then became really good friends with Busted and wrote a lot of Busted songs with them, and they wrote a lot of McFly songs with me. So our bands were, you know, kind of intertwined from day one. I went to school with Matt in Busted, and Harry, our drummer, went to school with Charlie in Busted. So, like, there's a real kind of crossover.
Yes,
so it's understandable. And then we joined for like 2.5 years as McBusted. Yeah.
Sounds like a burger, Tom. It sounds like a
exactly,
burger.
Exactly, I know. It's the worst band name in history. Yeah. So we were fully aware of that. Yeah. But it was, you know, we have a great relationship with those guys, and our bands kind of feel like each other's bands anyway, to some extent.
And McFly came from Marty McFly, which is a nice way to end it, because you're obviously, like myself, fascinated by time travel, or are you?
I am.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I grew up, like, Back to the Future, Marty McFly was my hero growing up as a kid. And so, yeah, and like my band is named after them. And now, you know, my new book is about time travel. Like, you know, the things that you experience as a kid have lasting impacts on you. And I guess my work is all an example of that.
Congratulations on the book, and there's an elf in your book is out later in the month, which is a for a younger reader. My 7-year-old read it, and I said, what's your review? And he said, tell him it's funny and that I'm on the nice list. So there's
perfect.
That's a good review, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a quote for the cover there.
Tom Darcy, yeah, your namesake. Right, Tom, been great talking to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, happy Christmas. I know it's
Thank
early,
you.
But...
Merry Christmas.
Right,
it's never too early.
Good luck.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
very talented young man and a very happy six-year-old. I have a six-year-old in the car, Robin, who's beside herself listening to her favourite author. And Ray, when you were presenting The Den back in the day, you had a cartoon version of the Ghostbusters on, and one of the stories was if Christmas didn't exist because they trapped the Scrooge ghosts' call. Yeah, if Christmas didn't exist. School closed also in Ballyhale. Is that how you say it? Ballyhale. In County Limerick. And on Anne and Phyllis, I'm doing a computer course at present in Loretta College, Mullingar. It's run by Age Action Ireland and given by the transition year students. It's most helpful and I'm learning loads. The girls are so lovely and so patient, says Finola. And there's a free 5-week course in LIT Limerick for people who would like to learn the basics of IT skills starting October 24th. And my mother's 78. She has a PC, iPad, iPhone. I show her how to do things on her iPad, iPhone. My siblings do what she wants on iPad, whereas I show her if she wants to look up something, she says, I must Google that. Her name is Kathleen Henry in Athy and listens to Radio 1 all the time. That's from Breda. And my name is Niamh. Myself and my grandma were listening to the show about Anne and her tech classes for the elderly. My grandma would love to join. Could you please email me back with her full name? Well, it's called Smart Agers. Smart Agers is the group, and it's only in Dublin at the moment, Niamh. And the email address is activeipads1@gmail.com. activeipads1@gmail.com. And still sayings coming in. This all started with an Irishman's diary, I think by Paul Clements was his name, in the Irish Times 2 weeks ago. And there's been a constant stream of old sayings and colloquialisms coming into the letters page of the Irish Times. We did it one day last week, mentioned it again, and they're all coming in. They're all coming in again. A shut mouth catches no flies. That means, you know, stay dumb on things. Just keep your mouth shut. My husband's favourite is, if brains were dynamite, he wouldn't have enough to blow his nose. And then on somebody who's a little bit tight, she would live in your ear. And you can't make a silk purse out of a pig's ear. That's an old one. And Barbara Clancy, you should have been listening to us during the summer because we were on the Shannon, and one of our stops was Banagher in County Offaly. And we had to ask a man who knew, where did the expression "that beats Banagher" come from? And he explained it to us. And he said there was loads of different theories. Can I remember one of them? No, I can't. So you'll have to listen back on the RT website. But there is some sort of an explanation for "that beats Banagher," which featured in that lovely Barry's Tea ad from all those years ago, which always, for me, signaled the beginning of the C word. I know we've mentioned it already. I won't mention it again for a while. And finally, on sayings particularly apt for today, or maybe not, storm in a teacup. Well, you heard what they've been saying. It's going to happen sometime overnight. That's what Deirdre Lowe said. Batten down the hatches, anchor down the trampolines, and stay back, stay high, and stay dry. Isn't that what they're saying? I want to get that on a T-shirt. That's it from us. There'll be more details of Lorenzo on Drive Time, which is on the way. With Mary Wilson. No, Sarah McInerney. And we'll be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday.